That's my music. Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Yes, Progressive Radio Network. Progressive Radio Network is ready for a very progressive topic from Love, Lust, and Laughter. We're going to talk about cannabis and sensuality and sexuality, and my guest is Dr. Nick Karas, and he has written a book called The Passionate High. And my co-host, are you there, Brian?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. So my co-host for this program is my new husband. Hello, Brian, again. So the three of us had such an engaging conversation at a sexuality conference, I thought we'd do it again for Love, Lust, and Laughter. And Dr. Nick, you're there.
Yes, I am.
Good, Dr. Nick. So we really love your book, The Passionate High.
Thanks.
And in my practice, I meet couples who complain about how the routine of their lives have left them feeling numb. And I think that you, Dr. Nick, may have just the remedy. And in your book, The Passionate High, the introduction speaks to folks needing to slow down and appreciate one another. Can you elaborate on this?
Well, I think you hit it on the head when you said most of the couples coming in, they've got just so much going on in their lives today that they can't get outside of themselves. They can't get outside of their story. And I think cannabis is a great opportunity to do that, to help you, in a sense, look at yourself in a different way.
Yeah, and you also use the phrase, get out of their analytic mind and slow down. And that's really hard for a lot of people. I would say, of course, I'm most familiar with folks here, and I see many of them in my practice in Seattle because a lot of them are very analytical and software engineers and that sort of thing.
Oh, definitely. We live now in such a fast-paced, in a sense, two-dimensional world. You know, I read somewhere that we consume almost five times as much information as we did 30 years ago. So
five
in a
times,
sense,
yeah.
We are becoming our head. We've kind of lost touch with our bodies.
Yes. Brian, jump in here because you're certainly aware of the mind-body connection, and you're one of the reasons I love you is that you're so in your body, and that's a wonderful thing.
Being in your body is kind of fundamental to being alive.
And, yes,
that's you know, when I read Nick's book, The Passionate High, it really resonated with me about how it's just a thoughtful guide about how you can use this, you know, substance in various ways to be more in your body and to enjoy life more.
Yeah, definitely. I like you, Brian, I'm a very sensual person, and people ask me where does sex come from? Where does desire come from? Is it of the mind or is it of the body? I tell them it's definitely a combination of both, but a lot of it is from the body. A lot of it is living, in a sense, a sensual life, a life that, you know, you're back into the kitchen, you're smelling things, you're listening to music, you can feel the sunshine on your skin when you go outside, you're laughing more. It's a sensuality, and from there, organically, you desire is created. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. I think that sensual, empathic sex, because we're back to sex here, can extend your pleasure immensely.
Yes.
And you have a nice section in your book on sex and intimacy and the senses, and we'll get more into that. But let's back up a little bit because it's very interesting how you came to do all of this. How did you get into this? Can you share with us about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. It is unusual. I've been a sexologist for about 12 years, and I was lucky at the time to be asked to be on the orgasm team, and yes, there is such a thing as an orgasm team, at San Diego Sexual Medicine. And at the time, we were looking for desire, and a lot of people were coming in, clients, you know, I've lost desire for my partner. A lot of women were having trouble having an orgasm. Mm-hmm. And obviously the pharmaceutical companies look at this and go, oh my gosh, let's come up with a pill. And at the time, they were doing the clinical trials for fulbanthrum, which is known as the pink Viagra. Today it's called Addy. And I watched the results come in, and I was extremely disappointed, let down on that. And it made me start to wonder on my own, well, where does desire come from, and where does my desire come from? And, well, I'm a child of the 60s, and I was introduced to cannabis with my first wife when we first got married. And to be quite honest, it's been a big friend of mine, and I've used it in the realm of sexuality my whole life, and I love it. And I thought, well, let's see what's out there as far as research goes. And it was very confusing. There was very little, and I thought, well, this is what I'm going to make my project on. And for the last 4 years, I have spent full time researching everything I can get my hands on about cannabis.
And you described, when we did the pre-interview, Brian and I, with you, mm-hmm. you described having groups come. That was pretty interesting, that experiment with different strains of cannabis or no cannabis. Just describe that one research bit you did.
I was lucky. A good friend of mine ran a dispensary delivery service, and he had over 1,000 clients. And mm-hmm. He was already collecting data on why they used it and what strains they were using. And so we paired up and said, well, let's put out some questionnaires. Who's using it for sexuality and why, and what are the outcomes of this? And so we started putting together small focus groups where we would bring in different strains. We would run different tests on couples, send them home with different strains and types. One of my favorite things was looking at the high and the cognitive effects. And I think I told you this morning, we would bring in games. We would bring in mental games to see what happens when you ingest some THC. And it was fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm. Were there any patterns, any trends in those particular focus groups?
Well, this is where I learned a lot. For some people, it really worked, and for some people, it didn't work. So then we started asking questions, well, what's going on? What is this? And that's when I came up with that it was all about the strain that they were using, the dosage, and the biggest one was the intention. Because now we're working with, in a sense, something that's working with the cognitive effects of the brain. And we were wondering, you know, like in the past, they often wondered why people got paranoia when they ingested pot.
Yes.
The reason we got paranoia is we were paranoid about getting caught when we took it in and got the high, and that accentuates the way we're feeling at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I really had to work with them on the intention and
yes.
setting the right scene and doing that, which is something we all really need to do all day long with our lives in general.
Yeah, our lives would be better balanced if we were more sort of focused and intentional. Brian, do you have any comments about the paranoia? Because this does keep a lot of people away from even or they may try it once and then they are afraid to go back mm-hmm. and explore again.
Well, getting high and then experiencing paranoia can be pretty disconcerting to someone, especially if it's the first time they've tried cannabis.
Yeah.
But I agree with Nick. Much of it has to do about the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that's why I feel strongly that,
you know,
that education at this point is so important because, you know, people will try it, and if they have a bad experience the first time, they don't want to go back. They don't want to go back and do that. And so to me, to have a good guide that explains how to do that so you have a good experience the first time. And the worst-case scenario, you have a little bit of an uncomfortable one for a short period of time, and you get to look at that in your life. And so, you know, it's getting people on track and talking about this that is so important. And that's why I was delighted to hear that you're discussing this on your show, because to take it out of the shame and the element and as a recreational drug and look at it as a life-enhancing and a sexuality-enhancing drug, it has so much possibility.
You said this morning that we have a lot of work to do because you have to give people permission. there's all these associations that are really negative that have built many positive, too, but have built up over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And that people definitely need permission to go ahead and try it, but maybe in a different... And if they follow your guide, I think it makes a lot of sense.
For instance, to start
with small dosages and experiment.
Definitely, definitely. And that's why if they do any research, they're going to hear about microdosing. And to me, microdosing is everything when it comes to this. And in my guide, I talk about the different types of high. And, you know, for all these years that it's been illegal, cannabis was used as a recreational drug to check out. It was used in a way like alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to suppress. I mean, you had a bad day, you came home, you wanted to forget about stuff. And so it's been interbred to have high THC levels so that you'll get nice and stoned. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you get to, you see all the funny things about people sitting playing video games and eating Doritos and checking out. And in a sense, it's true. It's what it was used for. But what people are missing out is prior to getting that high, there's a real opportunity to empower yourself, to change your life, to have new creative thoughts, to use it for connection. And when I started researching and I discovered that's what people were doing wrong, they were overshooting the mark. They were using it as a suppressant rather than an activant to make them more excited about life, to make them start questioning their reality. And that's why the microdosing is such an important element in this. Cannabis is a bimodal drug, which means it will have opposite effects at different amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting out, you know, go low, start slow and go low is the term on that. And it is such a very, very important one, you know, and that's why my personal preference for first time people is smoking. And,
mm-hmm.
and the reason I talk about that in the guide, the reason I suggest smoking, first of all, it's easy to obtain. It's very inexpensive. You can buy small amounts at most dispensaries and roll it. It comes on in 2 to 3 minutes, and it's gone in about an hour to an hour and a half, and you can gauge the amount so easily. You know, I tell people start with one little puff and then sit back and wait the 5 minutes. And if you're not feeling anything, then you can take a little bit more. You can gauge it so nicely that way.
Of course, we're talking about you're in California, we're in Washington State. Colorado, obviously, is the legal state, and there are a number of other states that have medical marijuana as legal, but and then there are some that don't allow it at all. So it's a problem. It's a problem for people that live in those states. They'd like to get some, and they need to travel to a legal state. I remember...
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was legalized here recreationally in 2012 in Washington State. And before that, I, even though I was aware of the advantages of cannabis for sexuality and for relationships, I could not bring it up myself. It wasn't legal to do it, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. But, you know, now knowing that it's legal, some clients ask me about it. And it's really helped a few of my clients. And we also have edibles here, the cookies that are, Brian, can you describe them? Because the dosage is very calculated.
Well, their typical edible dosage is about 10 milligrams of THC. And if for somebody starting out, you should probably only do about half of that. And,
at least.
And see how it affects you, because it can take an hour or more for the effects to fully kick in. That's why I like what Nick said earlier about when you're starting out, the smoking or vaporizing is it's much more precise in terms of, gauging what dosage works for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking about one couple that I've been seeing for quite a while, and he really loves to smoke marijuana, and he's a very well-educated man, very analytical guy, extremely intelligent, and his wife is too, but she was not so open to cannabis, and so they did try a cookie, except that I recommended to her that she start with half a cookie or even less. And she did that, and she liked it. And he said an interesting thing in the session. He said, for the first time ever, I was really interested in her work, in the work that she does. He really, his empathy kicked in, and he doesn't often have very much empathy, but it kicked in.
Yes. That is one of the highlights of the high is the factor of the empathy. And it's the thing that we loved back during the 60s when we would all go hide behind a house during a party and we would smoke. There was a community and there was an understanding and there was, you know, a love amongst everybody. And for a couple who've been together to bring empathy back into the bedroom, it's a really important thing.
Yeah, it really is. And you describe that well in your book. That you can really go deeper.
Yeah.
Brian, you weigh in here because I feel it all the time when we're experiencing intimacy that you're able to, I mean, you're already an empathic man for sure, but with the cannabis high, what would you say?
Well, it's again. I think it's important to emphasize when we're talking about this that it's people's experiences can vary, and it's not everybody's going to have the same reaction. But I think that one of the keys to this, if you want to try to adapt or use cannabis for to help your relationship, is to make sure that you've got a good foundation of trust so that you can feel comfortable doing this with your partner. And then also developing a good foundation for clear communication and being able to say yes, no,
yeah,
maybe, or
very
be
true.
Able to just describe what's happening. It's you know.
Yeah. That's one of the interesting things about it is I've noticed that when I send couples home with cannabis and they plan a date night, you know, their idea of the date night is they're going to have this wild, passionate sex. And a lot of times that's not what takes place. A lot of the times what they need to do is what you just said, is they need to create safety in the relationship again. They have unresolved issues. They have things going on. And so a lot of the times with the cannabis, when they do a light dose, it will create conversations that they were holding back. Things will come out. Sometimes couples will tell me, they fell asleep in each other's arms and they had the best night's sleep. You know, other couples will tell me they just laughed all evening. They never really made love. They laughed or they ended up going into the kitchen and making their favorite meal together. And they say, oh, it wasn't a success. And I go, oh no, that's intimacy. That's what you needed in your relationship. So it takes you where you need to go. And it brings you together as a couple. I just love the stories I always get from couples when they do this.
I do too. Cooking together is a rather intimate activity, or can be.
Definitely. I grew up with a Greek father who owned a restaurant, and I watched the passion in the kitchen. You know, one of the things I tell people about cannabis is that it's a journey. We're so used to quick fixes in our society. We want to take a pill for that. We want to eat that particular food to get healthy. Cannabis has a personal relationship with each individual.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to put the time into it and find the strain that works best for you, the dosage that works best for you, the environment and the setting that works best for you. But to me, it's one of the most wonderful journeys you can go on. It's to learn more about yourself through this stuff.
So, Nick, can you say a little bit more about what you discovered in your research or your surveys with your groups about the effects of different strains?
The different strains? That's
yes.
Interesting. I was looking for the ideal strain, and, you know, I would send it out to the couples. I would find one I love, Blue Dream, which is a very, very popular strain in the United States and all over the world. It's a really good one for me. I love Lavender Trainwreck. It was a wonderful one. But I noticed I'd send it home to couples, and it would work sometimes for one and not for the other.
Yeah.
I realize that we're all individual people, and some people are much more into their head. They hold their nervousness. They hold their issues in their head. Others hold them in their body. Their bodies become very tight. And so for some, a heavier indica is more important for them to relax. And for others, sativa works great. And so it's surprising how many couples I run into where they're not smoking the same strain and to get the same effect.
So they've been able to experiment with different strains to find out what works best for each individual.
Yeah. In the book, I talk about that. I suggest that you go to a dispensary, find one that you can talk to if you're in a legal state, and buy a small amount, a gram of a good sativa, a good indica, and then something right in the middle, a hybrid. And then on different evenings, take an evening and take a small amount and then go in the kitchen and cook dinner or have a conversation or watch a movie. And in the back of the book, I have a little journaling area. And write down how you felt on that strain. Were you a little bit edgy? Were you nervous? Did you need to move? Did you feel connected with your partner? Or did you feel like you wanted to go in and do some introspective work on yourself? Take note of these things. You know, did you get sleepy? Did you get excited? And you're going to do that when you start looking at strains, so you can at least get yourself into the indica or hybrid area, and then you can go back and fine-tune that.
So that's the last part of your book, which is the cannabis diary. I think that would be important to, especially important as you explore this whole field. It can be transforming if people will take the risks and do it with good intentions and setting the scene. Let's talk a little bit more about the senses, because I'm so glad that you say, I try to have my clients become more sensual first.
Mm-hmm.
When you are sensual, intimacy happens, and so does creativity. And they both happen when you're more sensual.
Definitely. What was interesting for me is first I had to look at the physical aspects of it. There's so much research right now on the medicinal possibilities and what it can do, and it's incredible. And mm-hmm. So the couple of things that I wanted to look at it is why do we feel more? Well, a lot of the people, when they looked at cannabis, when you first ingest it, you get kind of a rapid heart rate. And they were worried about that was a problem for us. What they didn't understand is the reason for that is it relaxes your entire core of your body. And in doing so, it relaxes your lung sacs. And when we have a lot of anxiety, a lot of cortisone and adrenaline in our bodies, we tend to take a shallow breath. And when
mm-hmm.
we're breathing shallow as a way of protecting ourselves, we're not oxygenating the body. And by
mm-hmm.
not doing that, we're dulling our senses. So what we noticed was that because you're relaxing the core, your lung sacs are relaxed, so you're able to take in more oxygen, and that's why the heart rate goes up, because what it's doing is it's sending oxygen all over your body, and that's why you get a little finer hearing, and your skin tends to tingle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And your smell, you're picking up small nuances of smell you weren't before. So to me, that was one of the physical aspects. Another thing we looked at was the testosterone. We had heard so much that it's bad for people. And they had that original study that they came out. We refer to it in the business as the suffocation study, because basically what they did was they put little gas masks on mice, and they gave them so much cannabis, it's amazing they even survived. And yes, their testosterone counts went down. This has been replicated. A new study came out from the University of Texas where they did it, and they found out that if you smoke too much cannabis, that your testosterone levels will go up almost 6 times, but then they'll plummet after 20 minutes and they'll go below baseline. But what they discovered, if you microdose, you get the same effect. Your testosterone levels will go up almost 6 times normal, but when they start dropping, they stay above baseline. So you
mm-hmm.
actually have a little bit more pumping through your blood. So this is what we found from the physical aspect. What really intrigued me was the cognitive effects. You know, what is the high? And very few people want to address the high, because it's always been looked at as from a negative connotation. You know, why would you want to get high? But, oh, my God, there's so much going on in there. And like we talked earlier, that's where the increased empathy is coming from. Another one we know we get is that enhanced imagination, you know, those things we call pipe dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I love that part of my life. Most of them are silly, but some of them are really good. And most couples who've been together for a long time, married 20 years, they go into the bedroom. Would an enhanced imagination help them out in the bedroom? You know, a lot. A lot. Another one is called enhanced pattern recognition. That one is always intriguing to me. I have one man in particular I remember came, and he, very heady gentleman, and he would smoke it and come back the next time, and he'd go, "I don't feel anything. I don't feel anything." And it's like, well, you gotta let go. You gotta let go. And he was having a hard time, but one time he came back and he said, "Well, I did your suggestion and I went for a walk. And I noticed that when I walk, I have this kind of a gant and I became uncomfortable with my walking." And that's called the enhanced pattern recognition. And once again, couples will get into a rut in the bedroom and they're doing the same thing again. And this will help you see outside the box as far as artists, musicians, and the creativity end of it. The enhanced pattern recognition is a big one for them to see outside of what they normally do. You know, I don't know if you've ever noticed that.
Absolutely. But before I go into it, Brian, you wanted to comment on that? I could hear.
Yeah, it's just I wanted to make a comment and ask you to talk a little bit more, Nick, about something that's very interesting in your book, I think. But it's kind of straight, you know, sort of basic information, but it really helps put the experience in a good context. And you talk about the three different stages of the effects, you know, the light touch, classic high, and stone. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, my son helped me come up with the names. But what we were looking for is that bimodal effect. You know, where are you just using it to enhance what's already there to give you more options for creativity? And where are you locking it out, where you're suppressing yourself so that you can relax? And so we came up with these three steps, calling it the light touch and then the classic high, and staying somewhere in between there. And for most people, myself included, it's probably just one puff, one and a half puffs. As far as an edible, I have people telling me 2.5 to 5 milligrams. Some people can do 7. Most people at 10, that's a little bit of a heavy dose.
Yes, go ahead, Brian.
So if this third stage, which you say is when you a large dose of cannabis, what's the best way for people to avoid that, especially?
Yeah, to me, to go over, it can be a little uncomfortable. The interesting thing is that this is a mind experience. So even if someone does ingest too much, and they start feeling uncomfortable, and it's a mental uncomfortable. What it is is letting go of the mind. We find that listening to some music, going for a walk, a lot of deep breaths, hydrating yourself. These are things that you can walk that uncomfortable feeling off if you want. An interesting thing that I read in some old ancient texts was that a peppercorn.
I hoped you'd talk about that. I've never seen that before. Go ahead.
Yes. And I thought, oh, well, there's no way this works. It supposedly works because there's terpenes in the peppercorn, and the terpenes in cannabis is what gives it that yummy smell, we know. And supposedly these terpenes will cancel one another out and bring you down to a calming effect. I have total control. I smoke a small amount, but one time, a couple of months back, a friend came over and wanted me to try an edible, and it was too much for me, and I became very, very uncomfortable. And so I ran into the kitchen and got my peppercorn grinder, and I tried it, and I swear, in 2 to 3 minutes, I was back to normal.
So now, you smelled it.
I just smelled it.
Yeah.
Just smelled it. Now, it could be the placebo effect, and it could be the fact that this is all mind control. But I had a few other people try it, and I've heard other people come up and tell me that the peppercorn is a good way to bring yourself back down.
Bring self back down.
Yeah.
The other thing that happens, having to do with the sensuality and getting high with cannabis, is that you get a lot of oxytocin released during interpersonal touch, and this promotes oxytocin. There's a fair amount of research on it. It promotes a feeling of calmness, pleasantness, and a mild euphoria. And some people have trouble really having that release of oxytocin because they're so much in a rut. So it's possible that cannabis could help with that release of oxytocin.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it mimics amandamide, which is known as the bliss molecule. And it's exactly what you're talking about. And that's why you get that euphoric feeling when you smoke. Mm-hmm. You're just happier. You see the world differently. You know, you're calm and relaxed. It's just such a pleasant feeling. Another one that I want to mention of the cognitive effects to me that I've been playing with, it's called episodic memory retrieval. And if you watch some of the Cheech and Chong movies or the Friday movie, they'll show the guys, they're walking to a party and they're smoking and they're getting high, and maybe they'll walk past the swing set. And all of a sudden, the two of them are back to when they were kids at 11, and they end up losing 2 hours on the swing set just laughing and telling stories. That's we've all been there at one point. And that's that episodic memory retrieval. And what I have been playing with, which is real interesting with couples, is they'll come in and they've been together a long time and they've lost that feeling they had at the beginning of the relationship. So,
which included playfulness.
It's there. So I'll say to them, well, let's stack this in favor. So before you both get high, I said, I want you to put music on that used to play when you first met. And then I want you to get the photo albums out, and I want you to lay pictures around when you first met, and maybe even bring in some of the snacks you used to eat when you first met.
Mm-hmm.
You ingest that, and this is your surroundings, and you're eating it. That kicks in the body's memories of those things, and you get those wonderful feelings. It's one of my favorite things to do is to bring out the old photographs and the old music with a little bit of a buzz, and I don't know, I feel like I'm back at the beginning of the relationship.
And the beginning of most relationships includes lots of playfulness, and people lose that because sex is essentially play. It's adult play, and you even mentioned this in your book. It's kind of can be fun to bring in erotic playthings like toys, sex toys.
Yes.
And those are the best kind of adult toys.
Like, yeah, definitely. You feel like a child again, and you're more daring, and you let your guard down a little. You know, and that old story, I brought out a vibrator and he was intimidated. And then you don't realize that was 22 years ago that happened. And now you can revisit that because, you know, it's you're conditioned differently.
Well, and also the vibrators are really high tech now.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Some of them are pretty amazing. And when a man takes it upon himself to be skilled with the sex toys, that changes the whole picture too, because I think that a man who's intimidated by a sex toy needs to rethink that and perhaps see the sex toy as his friend, not as a competitor or something because he might get tired. You know, he might get tired, but the sex toy doesn't.
Oh, I think men have to realize that a woman's vibrator is his best friend also.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. And if he experiments with the vibrator on his partner and becomes skilled at using it, she'll be very grateful.
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, just that openness. And to me, cannabis, it just brings passion back. It makes you aware how far you've gotten from yourself. You know, I'm a real believer of the body-mind experience, and I believe that the body has so much information in it. and so much understanding, and we lose touch with that. And I think that's my favorite thing. Another thing I should make note of is, though, I tell people, if you're going to use cannabis, you know, a lot of people are worried about, you know, is this addictive? Is this going to take control of my life? You know, technically, they haven't really proven that it's physically addictive. It can be mentally addictive. And it's like anything. It's like chocolate. It's like playing video games. It's like anything. If it calms you, you're going to like it.
Yes.
I tell people to take control, pace it. Another thing I tell, and I do it especially, is that I never smoke without asking myself first, why am I smoking?
Mm-hmm.
What do I want to accomplish with this? Do I want to feel more connected with my partner? Do I want to solve an argument maybe we're having and we're at an impasse? Do I want to use this? I think cannabis in a small amount can be a very powerful tool for the mind to open up your creativity, to see things from another angle. So to me, don't just smoke and then see where you go. Set your intention before you light up.
It sounds like you wanted to chime in there, Brian.
Oh, well, yeah, I did, and Nick answered, you know, spoke to what I was talking about. I just think that setting the intention is critical.
Yes.
Say, don't just. I mean, you can view cannabis as a tool, and you know, if you decide that you want to, you know, hammer some nails and you pick up a saw, it's not going to work very well.
So. Good analogy. Yeah.
Nope. If you know what the tool can do for you, then it's like having that intention is critical.
Yeah, it was fascinating when I started doing the conversation salons and, in fact, the workshops. I was just basically running ads on Craigslist and saying, do you use cannabis and would you mind coming into a group and talking about your experience? I assumed a lot of people were using it for sexuality like I was. A lot of people were not. They were using it for so many other things, for creativity. I heard from an accountant that told me that he would get distracted with the numbers, and a small amount would make him focus, and like the numbers almost came off the page to him.
Wow.
I have
all kinds of people telling me, I had mothers telling me that when the kids got on their nerves or they were feeling a disconnect and they were acting more like an angry adult, they would microdose a tiny amount. And that empathetic understanding, it made them feel like they were so much of a better mother. And just the story after story after story that I was hearing of how they were using it as a positive effect on their life. It was fascinating.
Nick, can you say more about this? You know, you have a section in your book about setting the scene. And I think that can be really important to avoid any kind of mishaps, but also to follow through with your intention for using cannabis.
Yeah, definitely. I think even if you're not using cannabis, to take your existing environment, maybe a stressful reality where you've got bills to pay and the laundry's piling up, and it's just, you know, your life is vibrating at this thing, and then to try to take that environment and say, okay, honey, let's make love tonight, you get distracted by all those things. And when you ingest a little bit of pot and you're increasing your cognitive effects, those things will stand out. When that high comes on and you're thinking of one thing and you're going into the mood of connection, and then your eyes float over and you see all the laundry on the floor, all of a sudden you're focusing on the laundry. That's what cannabis does. So you have to really pay attention to your setting. And to me, there's so many elements. I'm surprised how many people don't play music and don't use the wonderful effects. There's so much research out there on how music will sync with the heartbeat, how music will create oxytocin in the body and calm you. And so to me, pick your music accordingly. Obviously, don't use just a radio station, because if that McDonald's commercial comes on and you're high, your mind is going to go to McDonald's. and on a little side anecdote, don't play music that you played when you were with another lover, because when that music comes on, that memory, episodic memory retrieval, is going to put you back into the wrong place. So I tell people, be very careful with the lyrics and play something that has a beat that will correspond with your body for the style of lovemaking that you make. Some people like a more intense beat, and others very, very slow, mild beat. So play with the music. Lighting is something I have done my whole life. I know the effects of lighting. Every light in my house is on a dimmer. And when I come home from work, I bring all my lights down to about a 3200 Kelvin temperature, which kind of mimics as the sun is setting. And that's in our body. When the sun sets, our body goes through a transition. And that calms us. And it actually makes us more sensual and more sexual. So I tell couples, light candles, dim your lights. Be wary of fluorescence and the higher blue-green spectrum of your lighting. This stuff sets the tone. Another biggie, and people tease me about it, is temperature. You know, we talked about the fact that you're more sensitive, your senses are turned on, and your skin is more sensitive. Turn up the heat or cool it down. There's this optimal temperature that getting naked almost comes naturally to us. And so the high is going to be accentuating all of these things. So your set and your setting is so important on this high, so that the journey goes where you want the journey to go to, where you don't get distracted.
That's very important. I was just thinking that one reason Hawaii is called paradise and is a place for lovers is that the temperature is so nice and you don't want to have very many clothes on.
Yes, and the smells over there are intoxicating.
Intoxicating. Years ago, I gave Brian the title of Mr. Lighting Director because he's like you. He has almost every light. Mm. I guess you have every light on a dimmer, don't you, Brian?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So it is important, and the kind of music, and it should be music that maybe the couple needs to work on the playlist together. They might have certain favorites.
Definitely, yeah. And even if you're going to use it for non-sexual situations, I talk about creativity. And once again, I talk to so many artists. I had one woman who was a writer, a very famous writer, and she would get writer's block. And something would trigger her that when she was little, her mother told her writing was silly. I mean, we all have self-doubt in us.
Yes.
And that self-doubt can really destroy our creativity. And cannabis has that ability, like I said, once again, to create imagination and empathy and for ourselves. And so what she told me she would do is if she was feeling stuck, she would lay out all her writing materials. She would put her affirmations on the wall around her.
Mm-hmm.
She would play her music and get a warm cup of tea. And she would ingest just a small amount, like I said, that light touch of pot. And that was just enough that it triggered and it jumped her past that block. And I had musicians tell me that they create, you know, I think, who was it? One of the famous writers said, write stoned, edit sober. And I had so many musicians tell me the same thing, that they would use a little bit of pot when they were creating the music, but they were usually sober when they performed the music. And so they use that tool that's available from it.
So write stoned, do your writing when you're stoned, but edit when you're sober.
Yes. Everyone
that makes sense. And I've actually talked to some creators, I'm thinking of a producer of films, and she did the same thing. And then I'm thinking of a well-known friend of mine, I won't say her name, but she creates music, and she does it when she's a bit stoned. And so I think it's well-known. Going back to the senses, you write, cannabis increases blood flow and circulation, which further activates all of the many senses. So so we talk about food.
Goodness. Yes, everything tastes a little bit better.
It sure does. And it gets you to slow down. I think, you know, the two words I use a lot in my practice not just about this, is to slow down. Whether it's with cannabis or not, but it really helps to slow down and be in the moment. And so, but you write, the lighting, the foods, the sounds, and the smells may all become more heightened and receptive to sensation.
So much so. I know I'm going to say it wrong, but I think it's a Viktor Frankl quote where he says, between an action and a response, there's this little millisecond, and that's where we determine how we're going to react. And one of the things that I find so fascinating about cannabis is it makes time stand still.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at, and in that place, we can reframe our story. And to me, the hardest thing for a couple to do is to let go of a negative story, to let go of something. Maybe there was an affair years ago. There was something said that was hurtful. And it's hard to let go of those things. And to me, cannabis sometimes can be, and I think they're going to do a lot more research on this in therapy, where they're going to be able to use this as a tool to reframe a story.
Reframe the story. It can be useful. I sometimes, for clients who've had really difficult childhoods, I get them to do some writing. I haven't suggested to combine it with cannabis yet, but to rewrite their story. Because that can be very powerful, just the writing of it and seeing it. And the reframing.
And the interesting thing about cannabis is you don't have to use it all the time, and you don't have to use it that long. You know,
yes.
People will say, well, I don't want to have a substance that I have to bring into the bedroom every time. And it's like, no, you don't have to do this at all. The cannabis is known as a marker drug in a sense, because that experience that you have on it, you remember that the next morning. It's marked in your body. That good feeling is an imprint there. And so it's like anything. If you do something a number of times, that becomes your new reality. So I'll tell couples, you know, you can bring it into the bedroom for a couple of months, reframe your lovemaking, really go deep into what you want, and then you can put that away. And maybe just every couple of months when you get stuck, or you feel you're drifting back to old habits, bring it back. It's not something that you have to use all the time.
That's very true. And also you talked about recalling it the next morning, and that makes cannabis really different from alcohol. People that ingest too much alcohol often will have blackouts where they don't remember what happened. And
there's a couple of studies going on. Anybody can Google this on college campuses where they have interviewed the kids. You know, your first sexual experience for everyone, it's very uncomfortable. There's no question about it. And
it's
most
awkward.
Of us, if we want to be honest, we probably used alcohol to get through that first couple of experiences.
Yeah.
The sad thing about that is it's such a suppressant, and there's such a possibility of blackout where you don't remember everything. With cannabis, you do not have that at all. When they studied the kids on campus who used pot instead of alcohol, they had full memory of what they did, and they did not have anywhere near the regret sex that you have on alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, it's a whole different experience, what it's doing to the brain.
So, Nick, I have a question for you about cannabis. It's something that's not in the book, and I don't know if you have any experience with this or not. But your book is about the passionate high. It's a wonderful title of the book, by the way. I love it. That you get from the effects of THC. But there's a lot of stuff in the media these days about another cannabinoid, which is CBD. And I wonder if you have had any experience with that.
Say it again. What was the new other one?
CBD.
Oh, yeah.
Cannabidiol. It's used in...
CBD is incredible. The CBD is what's in there that causes that calming of the core. It relaxes the body. And I have so many clients that are using just CBD to get a good night's sleep. You do not get any effects from that. What they're finding out now is that it usually needs a little bit of THC to help activate the CBD. But the CBD is where most of the medicinal benefits are coming from.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and it also helps, you know, like a tincture that has 5-to-1 CBD,
yes,
with the one part THC, and it helps with discomfort and pain and inflammation.
Oh, and for women with their menstrual cramps? Oh,
yes.
Oh, my God. It's such a wonderful thing. You know, yeah, it definitely works. Cannabis and all of its different compounds are definitely something for an individual to start educating themselves on. And there's so much information out there. There's so many websites with news and podcasts like this one and other YouTube videos that explain how to use it and how to ingest. I'm delighted at the direction we're going. What I want to see more of is where we talk openly and freely. When we get together with friends and go out for a dinner, where we can actually talk about it and go, you know, do you ingest? What do you do? Where do you get yours from? What do you? We could learn so much from one another. You know, let's take it out of the secret and the guilt and bring it out into the main room where this wonderful plant can be acknowledged.
Well, this conversation the three of us are having will, by tomorrow, be archived, and so people can listen to it. And I'm going to suggest to a number of my clients that they do listen. There'll be some that I won't suggest it because they're going to be very closed to
yes,
cannabis in general. Yes. And that can be a religious thing. It can be a cultural thing from a different country. You know, it can be a number of things. And you even talk about that toward the end of your book, dislike. Some people will try cannabis,
yes,
and dislike the feeling that it has for them, and
yeah,
they choose not to use it. And so I'm respectful
that
of that.
It's illegal everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you think that's going to happen?
Oh, there's no question. To me, the timing of this legalization is perfect because the world is a bit uneven right now, and there's a lot of separation. There's a lot of not getting along. There's empathy. I just read another study that in college students, empathy was way down from what it was back in the 60s. And we feel it because of the isolation, because of the two-dimensional way we communicate through the internet. And so to me, cannabis has the opportunity to bring us back in the community, to bring us back outside of our houses and start talking to our neighbors, to start laughing again. I mean,
yes,
it's so important. So I'm excited. And yeah, the federal government's going to get out of the way real soon.
The federal government is, I didn't quite hear the last part. The federal government is going to do what?
Yeah, they're going to get out of the way real soon. It's always about money. You have to follow the money, and the big corporations want a piece of this pie. It's a very big piece of pie.
Yes,
and
yes.
So they're working out the details, and we're seeing that happen now. States are falling. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. I was told that Mitch McConnell had put a bill in to reschedule it. And so coming from that side of the aisle to reschedule it, I know there's money behind it, and Big Tobacco wants him to reschedule it. And so I'm excited, just so that we can start doing research on it and people can start hearing the truth.
Yes, and that's been a huge detriment, that
yeah,
there hasn't been enough research. It's starting to happen, but...
Yeah, the only research that was allowed by the U.S. government was for abuse. You could not research any of the positive effects. And so there's a lot. Israel is the number one research. For the last 25 years, Israel has been looking at it, and they're way ahead of us, and Germany's way ahead of us as far as using it, you know, to empower people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming. It's coming soon. I'm excited.
And you're also an optimist, and that's a good thing to be. I think we all
yes,
are, the three of us,
yeah,
are.
I think it's the cannabis is doing that to me.
Making you a better person.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. No, I agree. It when you have more empathy and your EQ expands, your emotional intelligence, it's such a good thing.
Yeah, your creativity. You start thinking outside the box.
Yes.
Which is really important.
All right. So I just want to jump in because I know we're going to be out of time in just a moment. But
yes, we will
just
be.
To recommend to people what a good book this is, Nick. It's called A Passionate High. It's a short book, and it's available on Amazon.com, and it's Nick Karras, K-A-R-R-A-S, is the author. So I encourage people to look it up and download it for your Kindle.
And you can also go to his website, passionatehigh.com.
Right.
And there's a lovely story.
You can ask me questions. I love getting questions about this.
Okay, so people can ask questions through your website.
Yeah. Well, I think the book itself is just it's really concise and to the point, and answers a lot of questions. And I think it's makes it very accessible. It's easily readable. So I would recommend it to anybody who has any interest in this.
And you say, Nick, it's a good beginner's guide. And I agree. It really is. There was a very sweet story on your website about your parents. And in 1945, you see them locked in an embrace, it looks like on the beach.
Yes.
And you say that they made love for nearly every night over 60 years. And you had a very good example, as did I, by the way. I don't know about every night, but when you have parents who are affectionate and loving, and so you can feel the sensuality in the family, and that sexuality is not taboo, that makes a big difference.
I can't tell parents. I mean, you can educate your kids and send them to Europe and the best schools everywhere, but the biggest gift you can give your kids is to show them that you love one another and to show them affection and to kiss and to grab and to laugh together.
Right.
That makes kids feel so safe and secure.
That's right.
Knowing that their parents are in love. I got that, and that was the biggest blessing my mom and dad. We were a very poor family, and they couldn't afford anything, but they gave me, I think, what was the most important gift, and that was that lovingness between the two of them.
Well, I feel, I think you're very fortunate. I feel the same way about my family. And that makes all the difference in terms of kind of letting go and openness to sexuality and all of that. Nick, thank you so much. The music's going to probably come on shortly. I think you've been a fascinating guest, and you'll probably send your clients to this archived podcast version. I certainly will send to mine. I want to thank you. I also want to thank Brian.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Because
just for people who know that the podcast will be on drdianawiley.com. We'll have it posted there.
Yeah, it'll be there too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you again,
Dr. Nick, and thank you again, Brian. Goodbye, everybody.
E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore. Mai tuoi piedi. Probabilmente a me tuo schiavo d'amore, ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare. In fiamme ti può andare, ne discuterai con qualcuno che ne sa parlare. Ma i tuoi piedi, tap tap tarata, ma i tuoi piedi, tap tap tarata.
da, happy feet. Da da da, happy feet. Oh,